Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart A. Cuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at symradio.com/live.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Hello, this is your host for The Missing and Abducted. Most often, when a child is abducted, the media will be reluctant to air a story about the alleged abduction of a child. According to the State Department statistics, there are about 3,000 children currently missing who have been abducted by a parent and taken out of the U.S. illegally, and this is a growing phenomenon. Every day a child is suddenly ripped from the life they know, whether it be parental or stranger abductions, and it should be our responsibility as citizens to help bring awareness to these abducted children and the major impact that it has on the families that are left behind. And that is why we have this show, to raise awareness to missing persons and parental stranger abductions, and keeping you updated on what is current in the news on these missing cases and the found. If you are a left behind parent of a stranger or parental abduction and want the opportunity to explain your story to the general public, or know of someone who needs help, then please email us at symradio@yahoo.com.
Welcome to a very, very special edition of Carson's Corner in conjunction with Speak Your Mind Radio and David Levitt. We are pleased that today, Friday the 24th, 2013, is National Missing Children's Day. And during the course of this show, we will discuss a few cases involving missing children, and you'll find out what you can do to help keep the search alive for the young and for missing people in general. Joining me is my co-host for this evening's show, David Levitt, founder of SpeakYourMindRadio.com and a missing children's advocate. David, how are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing today?
I'm glad. I'm glad that we have the opportunity to do this, to shed some light on some of these very, very important cases. And you know, really, really, it's in a way, it's a very, very bright day, the fact that we have National Missing Children's Day, but at the same time, we have just a lot of work cut out for us, and it's also a somber day on that note as well. But, you know, we're going to talk a lot this 2 hours. We're going to share a lot of information with the people at home, and so I just want people to just take in all that they can and try to become active, become part of the awareness campaign to, you know, ultimately find these missing people.
Yes, yes, definitely. And basically what this event is about, and it's going to be for the next 24 hours, and what we're going to be doing is we would ask that you share our cases that we share on our Facebook page, The Missing and Abducted. And we also have two other Facebook pages that we help admin also, that were all the missing children cases, updates, news, alerts, and links all could go on. So if everybody can, you can either go on our Facebook page or one of those other two pages. One's the National Missing Children's Day and International Missing Children's Day. And you can find that right on Facebook. Just go right over to my profile, David Levitt on Facebook. And just put facebook.com, NDFMA64, and you'll find all of the places that the pages that these cases are going to be shared on. And it, basically, this is to bring this event. It's the first time being held this year. And there's another event that's also being going on right now, and it's basically the same thing. It's just worded differently. And it's basically, National Missing Children's Day, National Missing Children's Day, Facebook Share Day, May 25th is what it is. And go right into the events you can see the events that I belong to, you can get right into there, and share their cases that they also have, too, on these three pages. So basically what it's going to be is it's going to be a Facebook Share Day of sharing all these cases that need to be solved. It's not only missing, also, it is murdered and unsolved, too.
That's right. And anybody out there that wants to share some cases with David, you heard the promo before the start of the show, you could email David directly at symradio@yahoo.com. Is that the correct email address?
Yes, that is. Yes.
Okay.
And they can also message me on Facebook. I have it set up because, in the past I was just basically everybody was accepting me as friends, and I was getting a lot of the, being as a missing persons advocate, is people that like to go in and you call them, I don't want to say the word, but the trolls are out, but these are, you have your good ones and you have your bad ones. And the bad ones are the ones that are trying to attack the groups. And so we have to be careful of when you're, you know, how I accept friends. So only friends with friends can accept me as a friend on Facebook. But you can go to our Facebook page and like it, and you'll be able to send messages to us. And those are checked on a regular basis. Right now I have two other volunteers who are basically in behind the picture right now. There's just me, Bob, here, mm-hmm. and also Justin is going to be joining also Carson's Corner here within the next week, talking with him earlier this evening. So we're all going to be going ahead and basically sharing these things, and he's going to be sharing, you know, things that we post on his personal page. And, of course, you know, he'll be doing his regular shows in here, and then I'll be coming in and doing mine when I have any updates on case or people that you go missing.
And that's another very, very good point, is that we are really expanding our efforts and trying to put more work into this campaign. And one of the areas that you could find information is the channel that you're listening to right now, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. When you actually click on that link, you'll notice that there's a variety of different shows. I host a few different shows, and David hosts shows on this website, and him and I will co-host shows like this, and Justin Ray Harvey is going to co-host shows, and all of us are going to expand our coverage to raise awareness for all of these different categories: missing children, murdered children, abducted children, and people too, because David has been highlighting some cases, and other groups have been highlighting cases of missing people that are not necessarily children. So it's very important. We include a wide variety of information here, and we're going to be featuring some cases on tonight's show. They're always heartbreaking in nature, and always, you know, out there. If you undoubtedly will be heartbroken by some of these cases, and I would just encourage everybody out there to take that sorrow that they feel and put it into action, and get involved, even if it's just as simple as joining one of the Facebook groups that David was talking about and sending it to other people, other friends. That's what the Facebook day is all about, is sharing it, just a social network, sharing it with your friends, and around and around and around it goes. And that does a lot of good. It could potentially put pressure on media outlets to raise awareness, especially in light of the recent developments in Ohio. It keeps these children's and these missing people, it keeps their faces fresh in people's minds, and it never stops. You know, I remember they had, you know, before they found Gina DeJesus, David, you remember, we did a show in April, and they had a candlelight visual, a big event where people would light candles and leave them, I believe, on their porches to try to guide Gina home, and ultimately they found Gina, and that light, that, you know, ever burning light of a candle is really a metaphor for, you know, our fight, that we can never let the light burn out. We always have to continue to have that light shine.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Well, you know, and this is, I just, hold on a second, I've got this. We know the local train coming by through, so if you might hear a train in the background, I'm up here in the Yorkshire, way in the mountains. So, but it is beautiful up here. I love it. But what they held earlier tonight in Cleveland from 4 to 8 p.m. Was actually first night out for missing persons. And that was held. And a lot of the things that they were doing, there was a link that I'm going to share in the chat room. As soon as I can get into the chat room, I will post that link to people, if there are anybody in the chat room. Is there anybody in the chat room at all?
There's one person that's a guest that's not registered, so I don't believe that they could post if they're unregistered. You have to register
that
with Block Talk.
Possibly could be me. Yep, that's me. Actually, that is me. So I do have that did finally open up. Okay, I'm on this laptop here, so it's, you know, it's an old laptop, and I do need a new one. So, but I can't be doing. I have another computer downstairs in the basement where I do all my editing, where my studio is. So, but that's down in the basement, all the wires down there, and that interferes with the cell phone. So, of course, and we're up at the base of the mountain. So I will post that link in there, and this is what they're doing, and it's going to be going on all weekend. There's one that's going on exactly tomorrow, and that is for Christina Atkins. And let me bring that note up here. Hold on a second. We got that train going by. Please don't blow your whistle. Now, flyers are going to be. Hold on a second. Are you hearing any noise in the back? Can you hear any noise in the background?
No, not at all.
Okay, all right. Christina Atkins flyers will be distributed tomorrow from 12 p.m. until 3, and corner of Kinko Avenue and West 25th Ave. And Tanya Atkins asked that's where people meet. You can bring family and friends and spread the word. Feel free to make posters and bring them along also. Now, if you do have any questions at all where this is, or how to get flyers, or a place where someone might be able to give up probably some donating and being able to let them donate, just email the Facebook group, and that is facebook.com groups Where Is Missing Christina Atkins. And you know, if we anything, we could probably try to see if we can get somebody to a print shop donate some flyers. I wish I was there close by in the area. I'm here in Stanford, that's in Ohio. You know, I tried working on a few other things and getting some flyers sent into that area together, but that was not possible.
Now,
so,
speaking of Christina Atkins, we have a few clips here that we really, I think, should play for the audience here. One is how Christina Atkins' family deals with, you know, the passing of her birthday without her. And I want to kind of play this for the audience out there.
If I could just say one thing, before you do play it, it is not our intentions at all to exploit any of these missing person cases, okay, to exploit the families at all. All we are doing is reporting the facts and the news stories that we get, okay? So I like to just say because that we are not trying to exploit them. But these are clips that we got, and this is some information on Christina. And you will go in. The next one will be a interview, the CNN interview on Anderson Cooper 360, with both Tanya Atkins, who is the sister of Christina Atkins, and the step-grandmother of Ashley Summers. So they both also talk about that, too. So those are two cases that you'll be hearing right now.
Okay, so what we're going to be playing the audience now is a clip on how Christina's family deals with not having her around for her birthday. And then from there, we're going to give you an interview with Anderson Cooper. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right, here it is.
And I believe Ed, yes, and Adam Walsh, too. I'm sorry.
Yes, of course. Keep in mind, and also while you're listening to this, please find out, act on the information that we've given you already, and try to become part of this effort. So we'll be back after these clips. Make sure to listen and make sure to get involved, folks.
And the escape of Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, and Gina DeJesus has given hope to other families of missing people, people like Christina Atkins.
Atkins vanished 18 years ago. Today is her birthday. New at 5:30, a move today could lead to increased focus on Christina Atkins' disappearance and the disappearance of other people. Shay Harris is live on 5. And Shay, I understand that this woman disappeared somewhere near Seymour Avenue?
That's right, Lee. Christina's family says she was last seen four blocks away from Seymour Avenue, where Amanda, Michelle, and Gina were found. Now they're hoping a new initiative will lead to answers.
Today's a bittersweet day for us because it's Christina's 37th birthday.
The family of Christina Atkins finds it hard to get through a day without thinking of her. That's especially so today, Christina's birthday.
We would love to have her home with us and be able to celebrate with her.
Christina's sister Tanya says they can't stop wondering where Christina is and if she's even alive.
It's been very hard on all of us. The not knowing is the worst part.
Christina's family has been through a lot since her disappearance 18 years ago. Tanya says the worst part was their father's death, which they believe was caused by Christina's disappearance.
Because he didn't know where his daughter was.
County Executive Ed Fitzgerald today announced a missing persons initiative following last week's discovery of three missing girls who were held captive 10 years. The mission is to make sure missing persons cases don't fall through the cracks.
But also to make sure that those that are not recovered, those individuals who are not found within 24 hours, remain a continued priority.
Tanya says she hopes the initiative will refocus attention on her sister's case. She believes incidents surrounding her disappearance don't add up.
A couple weeks before Christy disappeared, there was an attempted rape with her. And as far as I know, that the person was charged and convicted, even though Christy wasn't there to speak up for herself. That was given to me by the police. There's a lot of different things that I want them to look into.
Now, according to Fitzgerald, there are over 1,000 unsolved missing person cases here in Ohio. About 700 of those involve children. He also says there are currently 110 unresolved missing persons cases here in Cleveland alone. That's not including the 59 suburban communities. Live on 5 in the newsroom, Shea Harris.
And one of the things that's so startling about the discovery of these three missing women in Cleveland is that even though they disappeared in separate incidents, years apart, they all vanished within blocks of each other on the same street, on Lorraine Avenue. The home where they were found is just 3 miles away. Could their discovery lead to the discovery of other missing people in Cleveland? According to the Cleveland Police Department, 111 people there are listed as missing since 2006, 56 in this year alone. Two other women went missing from the same area. We want you to know about them. Christy Atkins vanished in 1995, just 4 blocks away from the house where the three Cleveland women were found. Christy was 18 years old at the time. She was also 5 months pregnant. Her sister, Tanya, and her stepmother, Mary, are with us tonight. And the audience is Linda Summers, the step-grandmother of Ashley Summers, who was 14 years old when she went missing in the same area in 2007 in Cleveland. I'm glad you're all here. When you heard the news about the three missing women in Cleveland, what went through your mind?
There was immediate hope that my sister was one of the three that they found.
And how long did that hope last for?
Maybe an hour. We immediately went to the hospital to see if it was my sister.
Are you still hopeful that something about this case will trigger some new information about your sister?
I'm very hopeful that something will, because of this case, will turn around and help me find my sister.
How do you feel? Do you feel the police have been on your side, have worked for you?
I don't feel the police have really done as much as they could have for my sister.
Why?
They came to the house one time, basically told us that she left of her own free will because she was 5 months from being 18, and that they weren't really going to do anything more. But if we found her, to call them and let them know.
They said if you found her, call the police.
Yeah.
How did that make you feel?
Oh. Aggravated. Like we're having to do their work. Their eyes and ears. Instead of them being out there telling us that as soon as they find anything, we will hear anything.
John, we hear this from so many families whose kids are over the age of 18 or, you know, 20, 21.
The real dilemma. And I've got to say this to you, Anderson. This show is about hope. This is keeping these cases in the forefront. And I've always asked, why does it have to be the parents and friends and family that has to do it? But that's the reality. They have to do it. And the real quandary is that, yes, most of people who run away, the 2 million kids that are reported missing every single day in this country, 99% of them turn up. But every one of Ted Bundy, for example, serial killer, almost every one of his 30-plus victims was listed as a runaway. They had families that begged police to say, no, I know my kid. I know my kid, or I know my daughter, or I know my sister. And she didn't run away. She couldn't run away. And I have said it to police for years. You're sitting there, and you make an arbitrary decision, and you sign the death warrant of that person because you say, nah, too busy, run away. And it happened in this case in Cleveland.
With Michelle Knight. She was actually taken off the list after
about 6 months. Nobody cared
about
Michelle Knight. She was 20 years old. Nobody but her family was looking for her. Even Amanda. Amanda was listed initially as a runaway. Before her mother died, we profiled her on America's Most Wanted several times. Her mother said, my heart is broken. My daughter's not a runaway. She's somewhere. And she was dead right. She was in the house of hell with a horrible pedophile.
You have no doubt that Christy didn't run away.
I'm positive my sister Christy didn't run away.
What makes you so sure?
She was 5 months pregnant at the time of her disappearance, and she was going to go the next week and find out if she was having a boy or a girl. We were talking about planning a baby shower and baby names.
And she was excited about the baby.
She was excited. She loved children. And I just feel that she didn't run away.
Ashley Summers It is believed that she probably left of her own accord, that she actually packed things. She was staying at what, her uncle's house?
Yes, her uncle's house, which is just 10 blocks, maybe, if that, from where the girls were found.
And you actually believe that you saw her about 7 months after she disappeared?
Correct. Driving down another part of Lorraine Avenue, it was nighttime, and we were driving one direction, and she was walking towards our car. And we had a pretty distinctive car. We had a big car. The girl was staring intently in the window. And it took a double take. I think that's her, because
she looked different. Her hair was cut short.
Her hair was cut short, dyed blonde. By the time I got the car turned around and we went back, she darted down an alley and she disappeared.
What do you want people to know about her?
I want people to know that she was a loving sister. Her sisters and brothers miss her.
Did what happened this week also give you hope?
Yes, it did. We were actually hoping that she also was one of the girls, and then once we found out she wasn't, we were hoping they would at least have information about her, because Ashley also went to the same middle school as Gina DeJesus, and we really believe, and she frequented that neighborhood where they disappeared from.
John, it really is, in the end, it's up to families, it seems like, more often than not.
To carry the ball.
Year after year.
To keep the case alive. And you and I have done so many shows on sex trafficking. So let's say maybe she did go. Maybe she decided, I had an argument, et cetera, et cetera. How many pimps have I profiled on America's Most Wanted who have beaten or killed the girls that they picked up at the bus stop, saw run away, manipulated them, and then when those girls tried to leave or testify against that pimp, you would never hear from them again. So many teenagers that have run and have wound up being horribly exploited because, oh, they come from families of abuse or alcohol or sexual abuse and hit the streets. The streets are worse than the house, but for them, they're not. But this family is desperate to know something about that girl. And wouldn't it be at horrible, Anderson? Maybe it's not Castro. Maybe it's somebody else.
Well, Mary and Tanya, I appreciate you talking to us, and I do wish you strength in the days ahead, and Linda as well. Thank you so much.
Hello, this is your host for The Missing and Abducted. Most often when a child is abducted, the media will be reluctant to air a story about the alleged abduction of a child. According to the State Department statistics, there are about 3,000 children currently missing who have been abducted by a parent and taken out of the U.S. illegally, and this is a growing phenomenon. Every day a child is suddenly ripped from the life they know, whether it be parental or stranger abductions, and it should be our responsibility as citizens to help bring awareness to these abducted children and the major impact that it has on the families that are left behind. And that is why we have this show, to raise awareness to missing persons and parental stranger abductions, and keeping you updated on what is current in the news on these missing cases and the found. If you are a left-behind parent of a stranger or parental abduction and want the opportunity to explain your story to the general public or know of someone who needs help, then please email us at symradio@yahoo.com.
We're back live here on this special edition of Carson's Corner. I'm joined by David Levitt of Speak Your Mind Radio. And David, you know, just some interesting things that we heard from the Christina Atkins case, and something that, you know, we've been talking about, and it's a point that John Walsh brings up, that it's up to the families to keep the cases alive. Well, you know what? I say that's not true. That it's up to us too.
Yes, it is up to us. But yeah, I think what he was saying in that, he was saying it's up to us, meaning advocates.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the family cannot possibly carry the. I mean, you know, they can't possibly do enough to raise the awareness that these cases warrant. And so it's really, you know, listening to that, it makes it feel more incumbent upon us to really try to carry the ball in any way we can. Just some interesting things here that I got from those clips that we played. Almost every one of Ted Bundy's victims was listed as a runaway. Now that is absolutely amazing, because as we know, this predator who is often considered America's worst serial killer actually struck in so many different states. And mm-hmm. so if you have an inclination of a police department to basically just dismiss these cases and say, you know what, this person is 20 years old, there's no reason to think that they're alive anymore. They're pregnant. There's some sort of issue and whatnot. That's no excuse for the police departments to really give up hope. But unfortunately, this is the reality. I mean, unfortunately, as we know, our police departments are inundated with just all these different cases, and they can't possibly keep up with all the missing children that are out there. And that's where we come in. And that's where, you know, our efforts can help to keep the cases alive. Because I hear, you know, I think it was Christina's sister that said that, I don't feel that the police have done too much for my sister. They dismissed them. They basically said that, you know, call us when you find her. In other words, you know, we don't think there's a problem here. We don't think that she was abducted. And you hear that, and you just get very, very frustrated, and you almost can't help but to criticize the police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I don't like criticizing the police. I mean, because, you know, the police has been there for me plenty of times, okay? I mean, with my ex-wife, okay? You know that story about that I'm going to mention, but I'm not going to go into that. But, yes, I mean, it is. And now that actually that, you know, Heather White, who was going to be joining us tonight, but we have to arrange, like, on that, she and I, well, basically she has, because she was working right directly with the family. I mean, I was doing the recent posts that we flyers that we did for her, and basically she's been keeping me updated with what's going on with this and the fight and the vigil that they had last year, you know, when Nancy called in,
right.
You know, things like that. And like, there is one thing that, you know, I could say, and I'm like, Eddie and Heather has mentioned to me, and what she did, when you go to these vigils, okay, watch and listen, okay, some of the people that came out, because the person that took Amanda was there on one of their vigils, and he asked how she was doing, and if, you know, and he even helped hand out flyers.
That's just remarkable.
That is so remarkable. And degrading, in a sense, too. You know what I'm saying? But this is what you have to look out for.
Yeah. And it only just illustrates the fact that this person is just absolutely void of any type of emotion out there to do that while he's got three girls captive in his house. It's almost beyond what a Hollywood movie producer could come up with. I tell you, but no, you're absolutely right. And you never know what happened. You never know the person next to you could have a hand in this. But you know, I unfortunately, I'm a little closer to Ohio than you are. I'm in New Jersey, and it's a couple states away. But one of the troubling things about the Atkins case, and how, you know, Christina is 37 years old. We'll be 37, or I think her birthday passed. So she's
Her birthday was 16.
Yeah, so she's 37 years old.
Yeah.
Is that so many disappearances? This occurred very close to where these three girls were held captive for 10 years. Mm-hmm. There have been 56 missing persons in Cleveland. And, you know,
that's,
you have to wonder.
Cleveland and all. That's not the whole, that's not the whole state of Ohio.
Well, you have
and
to wonder.
I believe I shared that link with you, if you could post that into the chat room, because I do not have that, because it's on my other computer in my history, so I don't have that. And if you could post that in there, in the chat.
I'll be going on my Facebook, and I'll attempt to do that. But you have to wonder, what's going on here? Is there a connection between these cases? Is there another House of Horrors, as John Walsh was talking about? And you know, it, in a way, you know, it gives the family hope, and it would certainly give me hope. But there may be a connection here. And here's where I start to wonder about the police, because they have this guy, Ariel Castro is his name, right? This is the guy who's being charged with the kidnapping and whatnot. And there were two other people living in the house, and I believe they're not charged, and they didn't know anything about what was going on. I'll be the first to admit that I haven't aside from just reading a few news reports, I haven't done a lot of research into this case. But you would like to think that if this guy, this scumbag, was working with somebody else, if he knew of a similar situation in a similar house, that they would get it out of him and they'd be able to find more women. And, you know, what's to say that he wasn't involved in other disappearances out there? I mean, this is all speculation, and, you know, I understand that, but, you know, these are angles that you would hope that the police department in Cleveland would look at and investigate. And I know that, you know, I don't like to criticize the police either, because, you know, the police are accountable to us, and the police are us, and you know, they put their lives on the line for not a lot of money in this country. But some of the reports that I've heard regarding the police conduct or the police investigations, and some of the things that I've heard, have been troubling. And it's just, you know, the fact that you had three girls held in captive for such a long time, one of them actually had a child, it's almost impossible to conceive that nobody else could have saw them, or there could be no possible suspicion that something is wrong, especially with the reports of one of the girls crawling in the backyard, just on and on and on. So my point is that we have to look at the police in a skeptical light too, to make sure that they're doing everything they can.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I just want to, like I said, I want to point something out though, but Nicole Cable from I can't remember what town, but it's been named. Beginning of this week, or the last week, she went missing. And her body was found just a few days ago. I mean, about a few days after she went missing. And within 24 to 48 hours, they had an arrest already. And the guy was arraigned just yesterday. So, you know, that is, you know, so law enforcement out there, you know, and that's good. And I was glad about that. You know, but like you say, you have some of these departments or some of the authorities that they don't investigate them enough.
Yeah, and that's up to us, and I think it's up to us to be critical of the investigation, and it, you know, where there's misconduct and where there's a lack of diligence, we should raise awareness to that, because I think that with these cases, there's no more credible judge of the work that the police are doing than the victim's family. And they, you know, you could just talk to them and say, do you feel the police have done a good job? Do you feel that they've covered all the leads? Do you think they've been dismissive? And then, you know, that is a good indication of how, you know, the police are doing. Now, David, you had wanted me to post a link to the chat room. What link did you want me to post again? Because right now I'm on my Facebook page.
We were just, I think I shared it with you on Skype.
Okay.
I believe. I think that link you were talking about.
Yeah. I might not be able to get on Skype, but what was it? What was it about? What was it?
Okay. We were, because I just was working on the next case that was going to be coming up. Like I say, if I find it, if I can, when I get down on the other computer, like I say, I will post that link in the comments. The broadcast in the chat room.
We want to say hello to Heather White, who's in the chat room. Now, thank you very much for joining us. David, do you want to go into the next case now, or what do you want to do?
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Well, the next case, let's see. Let me open in my notes on the next case is, is Ashley Summers. But I have nothing on, really, as far as any news footage. I don't know if Heather does, if she could possibly post a link of that in the chat room to that. So that way, and then by the way, people can go into this event. I'll share that link here also to the event and join it. And all of these news stories will be there in that event. So just go to the Missing and Abducted and go down to events, and they'll be right there. So anybody that is listening in the archives, you can get those links and read up on those stories and see these other videos that I was not able to get. That is Ashley Summers. And let me see, I think I did post it in the chat room. Hold on a second here. About, actually, if you go on my Facebook page, it's there because I think I did share it on that because we were live. Oh, shoot. My browser just crashed.
No, but this is another female that was missing from the Cleveland area.
Yes, Ashley Summers. She's been missing since. Look in the chat room here. Can you see the chat room right now?
Yes.
If you screw up. I think, or it may be on my Facebook page, I'm sorry. Because right now my browser just crashed, so I have to reboot my whole computer.
I see.
Sorry about that. Okay. It's Heather. If you could post a little bit of information, or if you can actually call in and share this case with us, it would be great. We'd really appreciate it if you can do that, if you're able to. We did try the Skype feature. That does not work. So you're going to actually have to call in with a phone. So I don't know if you can. But as soon as, go ahead and let's start off. We'll get back to Ashley Summers. Let's go ahead and start off with Dylan Redwine.
Okay, perfect. Okay. What we're going to play, why don't you set this up. We have the interview with Dylan's dad. We have Actually, let's play just an overview of his case.
That would be. I believe I named that one Dylan Redwine. I think it was part one.
Okay, yeah, because there's
it's the one before part two.
Yes, exactly. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to play you a series of clips here to just give an overview of the case here, and then we'll come back and we'll play you some interviews so you can get more information about this case. So this is the case of missing Dylan Redwine, been missing since November 19th, 2012. So here it is.
Well, the first case I'd like to highlight is Dylan Redwine. He's 13 years old. He's missing from the Valecto Lake area near Bayfield, Colorado. This is an endangered missing case. and he was born February 6, 1999. He's been missing since November 19th of 2012. The boy's mother and father had been involved in a custody dispute, and the boy was visiting his father as part of a court order. Dylan was picked up by his father, Mark, Sunday evening at the Durango Airport. Dylan made plans to arrive at his friend's house the next morning to hang out. Dylan's father, Mark Redwine, told the mother he stirred around the house early in the morning to wake Dylan, but he didn't want to get up, so he went to town without him. He told her he ran errands in Durango during the morning and returned home at 11:30 a.m. to find Dylan gone from the house. His whereabouts during this time has been confirmed by investigators. Dylan's cell phone and belongings are also missing. People reported seeing him walking, but all of those reports turned out to be unsubstantiated. There is another older boy at the lake who looks similar to Dylan. At 4:15, Mark said he went to the friend's house that Dylan was supposed to be hanging with to see if Dylan showed up there. Finding two of Dylan's friends there, they said they had been trying to contact him all day to no avail. Mark then said he went to the marshal's office to express his concerns that he couldn't find Dylan. Dylan's mother was notified Monday afternoon that her son was missing, and she drove immediately from Colorado Springs to Durango to aid in the search. Dylan's brother and other family members accompanied her. She arrived on Monday night. The Plata County search and rescue searched for Dylan Monday night and all day Tuesday.
Volunteers in southwestern Colorado spent part of their Thanksgiving searching for a 13-year-old boy who went missing while visiting his father. Dozens of people searched yesterday around Vallecito Reservoir and Forest Lakes, passing out flyers and knocking on doors, looking for Dylan Redwine. The boy was last seen Monday morning. He lives with his mother in Colorado Springs, but a judge issued his father visitation rights for the holidays. Authorities say he may have run away, but haven't ruled out foul play. Someone reportedly saw Dylan walking along a road in Durango with another boy Monday afternoon. Both had backpacks. Dylan was last seen wearing a blue and white Blue Devils baseball cap, a black Nike t-shirt, black basketball shorts, and black Jordan shoes. A team of cadaver dogs helping in the search for missing Colorado teen Dylan Redwine have picked up a scent near Vallecito Lake, an area that's become one of the focal points of the search.
We had a couple of hits in that area, but what we did was we moved it closer to the east side of the lake where the rivers, the five branch rivers, flow into each other on that side, and we had many alerts going off there.
The group K9 Forensics of Edgewood has been in the Vallecito area for 2 weeks now searching. They say while they have gotten scents, they have not found any sign of Dylan. He disappeared 3 months ago during a court order visit with his father. The group will share their findings with the sheriff's department, which will then decide what to do next. The group is doing this for free for the family.
Oh, to give closure.
Hello, this is your host. Hello, this is your host for the missing and abducted. Most often, when a child is abducted, the media will be reluctant to air a story about the alleged abduction of a child. According to the State Department statistics, there are about 3,000 children currently missing who have been abducted by a parent and taken out of the U.S. illegally, and this is a growing phenomenon. Every day, a child is suddenly ripped from the life they know, whether it be parental or stranger abductions. And it should be our responsibility as citizens to help bring awareness to these abducted children and the major impact that it has on the families that are left behind. And that is why we have this show, to raise awareness to missing persons and parental stranger abductions, and keeping you updated on what is current in the news on these missing cases and the found. If you are a left-behind parent of a stranger or parental abduction and want the opportunity to explain your story to the general public or know of someone who needs help, then please email us at symradio@yahoo.com.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at symradio.com/live.
All right, we're back here on this special edition of Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson, and I'm with my co-host for this evening, or for this morning, rather, David Levitt of Speak Your Mind Radio. David, before the break, we heard about the Dylan Redwine case, and, you know, this is, again, another heartbreaking story where you have the parents involved with a custody dispute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He goes to visit his father, and then he turns up missing, and subsequently the police department, you know, conduct a search, and one of the dogs picked up a scent on one of the rivers in that area, and then the case is pretty much cold at this point. Well, not cold, but I don't know if the police have any additional leads or whatnot. You had mentioned in the beginning of that report that Dylan Redwine is considered an endangered missing child. What does that mean?
Endangered missing is basically someone that it classifies a lot of things, but someone it could be like if harm is going to be caused to him, or okay, like you take with this here, you know, searching the house and searching all the lakes and the lake there and around the whole area and not being able to find anything, not one clue, okay, then it would be considered endangered because harm could have been brought to him.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
yes. But there's also other endangered types too. I mean, you have Christina Kleckner, okay? She could cause endangerment to herself, which I have nothing on this. I believe I did have a short little clip that
yes.
We could play. Okay, good, I did do that. So that, you know, it would just tell you about this. We're still waiting on getting back, the family getting back with us because there was a few changes that needed to be made. Flyer that was actually made by somebody else had just some misinformation. So we are waiting on the confirmation from them on the changes that has been made. It's okay to go with that. So that flyer will be up as soon as we get that confirmation. And she was missing. She's been missing over, I believe it was October of 2011, I believe it was. I'm going down here. I think I got it. It's in our event. Down at the case down at the bottom, I believe. I believe it was October of 2011, I believe. Yes, it was. She was reported missing on Sunday, October 2nd of 2011. So
now, did you want me to play the clip that you have?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that, and then go into the interview with the mom on Dylan Redwine.
Okay. All right, we're going to play a clip here. This is regarding the case of, what was the last name is Kleckner. What's the first name?
Christina.
Christina Kleckner. Okay.
Yep.
Here it is.
To
Tonight, a Cleveland mother and father are pleading for help to find their missing 24-year-old daughter. Christina Kleckner is mentally challenged and has been missing for more than a month now. Kristen Severance with the Ohio News Network joins us with more on the search that has turned desperate.
Leon, take a look at Christina Kleckner. Now, she's 24 years old, but her parents tell me she has the mental capacity of an 8-year-old. Now, they say that she needs 7 medications a day in order to lead a stable life.
It's like having a baby out there on the street.
Sandy Kleckner tears up when she talks about the last time she saw her daughter. It was October 2nd. They had a fight.
And she asked if she could go trick-or-treating. I told her that she couldn't go because she's too big.
Her 24-year-old daughter, Christina, has a developmental disability, so she functions as someone who is 8 or 9 years old. She plays with dolls, loves Tinkerbell, and wanted to dress up and go trick-or-treating.
She got really mad at me. And started screaming and yelling and kicking her feet.
Sandy went upstairs to cool off. She and her husband went to bed and thought their daughter did the same.
Until the next morning when I woke up and my baby was gone.
After the fight, Kleckner's parents tell me she left out of a back door that was mistakenly left unlocked. After that, it was like she disappeared.
She vanished, period.
Albert Kleckner's last words to his daughter.
Don't fight with your mother.
He doesn't know how she's taking care of herself. She can't read, write, or even count change.
When she left all her Barbies and dolls and no change of clothes, no brush, no comb, no nothing.
She also left her medications. She takes 7 pills a day.
They're anywhere from keeping her from getting dangerous to other people, dangerous to herself.
A Cleveland police detective came by the house Thursday. 2 community groups are trying to help find the girl. Until then, Sandy has worried herself ill.
Because I know the kind of trouble that's out there.
Another look at Christina Kleckner. Now, she goes by Tina, or Tink. That's short for Tinkerbell, her favorite Disney character. If you see her or know anything, call the Cleveland Police Department. Live in Cleveland tonight, I'm Kristen Severance, the Ohio News Network.
Just an absolute heartbreaking case here of a mentally challenged young lady who unfortunately has gone missing. That's these are just real, real dire sets of circumstances here. And what are your thoughts on this, David?
It's my thoughts is I just hope, okay, that she didn't endanger herself. You know, I hope that she's out there and she, you know, she just could be, you know, I mean, in a shelter. She could be in a shelter. She could be somewhere, you know, and they not giving up her, you know, she could be not knowing who she is, okay? She could be knowing who she is and just going under a different identity. And that's my opinion on this. Now, like I say, I don't know much about this case and what all involves around. It's just that one report. And like I say, I can't really comment on what I think until I know more information.
Where could people go to find more information about this case?
To find more information about this case is in the Facebook group. And that's where we will be posting any updates that on and what's going on. And I'm going to that group right now. Get the link so I can post it in the chat room. It's called Help Find My Sister Christina, and I will post the link in the group, in the chat room and also in our events. But it's facebook.com groups 571-698-4461-97471. Again, that's 571-698-4461-97471. Excuse me.
All right, so that's where people can go to find more information about this case. We're going to go back now to the Dylan Redwine case. This is a 13-year-old, I believe, that was has been missing since November 19th, 2012. And we're going to first play you. This is going to be an interview with his mother, David?
Excuse me? Dylan's mother? Yes.
Okay. And then we also have an interview with his father as well.
Yeah, I believe that's the one that's like 24 minutes.
Well, the interview with Dad is 39 minutes, and it looks like the Dylan and Red Wine file
is... That's his father. That's his father. That's
okay.
The father's interview. Well, you can play either one. Either the father or the mother. It doesn't matter.
Okay. We're going to start off with playing an interview with the mother, and that'll be able to give you more information about this case. So we'll play you this interview with Dylan Redwine's mother right now here on this special edition of Carson's Corner.
Tell me a little bit about Dylan. What kind of kid has he been growing up? What's he like? What is he into?
You know, so many people have asked me that. Dylan is just a very humorous kid. He's got such a great sense of humor, always made us laugh, very conscientious, very selfless, you know, very caring, very giving, just an awesome, awesome kid. I never really had any issues as far as him. You know, he was 13, he'll be 14 soon, and never really dealt with, you know, that teenage year. He's an awesome, awesome kid.
Was he 7th grade, 8th grade? 8th grade, right?
8th grade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's going to turn 14?
On February 6th.
Have you made plans for what you want to do for his birthday?
I want him to be home for his birthday. I mean, that's, you know... Right now, that's just the major, I would like him home today. I would like him home now. But I haven't really thought that far. I mean, I just keep hoping he'll be home before then and he can plan his birthday.
Okay. Take me back to November and tell me, you know, you put him on the plane on Sunday and then... And then what happened? Did he call you and say, hey, Mama made it okay? Or
As he always does, he texted me and let me know that his dad had picked him up. And that was the last time I heard from him.
What time of day was that?
It was at 7:06 p.m. on Sunday night. And I have not heard from him since then.
Did you try to get a hold of him on Monday?
I texted him. I texted him Sunday night and I texted him Monday morning. But, you know, it wasn't uncharacteristic of Dylan not to text me back right away, especially if he was with his friends, which is what I kind of assumed, you know, had happened, because I know he was really excited to see his friends. So I really didn't think much of it. And then that afternoon I got a text from his dad asking me if I knew where Dylan was.
What did you think when you got that text?
Well, I was dumbfounded. I mean, you know... Dylan was visiting his father, and I told him it was very disconcerting that he had texted me and asked me where Dylan was, considering I'm, you know, 5-6 hours away. So, you know, we all got in the car, and we drove to Durango.
Immediately?
Yes, immediately. I came home, packed a bag, grabbed Mike, grabbed Corey, and we were on the road to Durango.
When did you know that it was serious that he was missing?
You know, that's a tough question. I mean, it was serious when, you know, his dad texted me and said he hadn't heard from him. But I never thought that, you know, we'd be sitting here 2 months later and he wasn't here. So I guess the seriousness just grew and grew and grew as time went by.
You know, we were talking, there's those pictures from the airport and from Walmart, right, where he's in that outfit with the, what is it, Blue Devil's hat?
Uh-huh.
And the T-shirt, and do you think that when he went missing he was probably still wearing that?
Yes, I do. Dylan didn't change his clothes often. He was 13 and, you know, he was just learning about, you know, his brother was teaching him about deodorant and things like that. I mean, so he wasn't, you know, he wasn't all that worried about, you know, what he was wearing, or he always thought he looked fine.
A typical 13-year-old boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He likes sports, especially baseball, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He loved sports. I mean, that was him and his brothers, you know, he loved throwing the football around with his brother. He didn't necessarily like playing. I mean, he liked to play football. He wasn't just, he just wasn't all that big on the tackling and, you know, the pain. So he really enjoyed baseball, though, and really enjoyed playing baseball.
So you guys moved here last summer. Did he want to be here? Was he acclimating well? Do you think there's any possibility that he just, you know, was being bullied or anything like that?
No, absolutely not. He loved being here. He loved his friends. He made so many friends here. He loves going to Skate City with his friend Joe and all of his friends in our old neighborhood in Carr Springs. He woke up every morning bright and early for school because he was excited for school. In Bayfield, he would I'm sick today, or, you know, it was just a little bit harder. But here, he loved being in the city. He loved just the atmosphere of what was going on, around here, and loved being able to go to the Rockies games in the summer. We went to Waterworld, which is, I mean, he enjoyed it. There was no indication whatsoever that he didn't like being here. And Dylan talked to me, you know. It's not like we didn't have conversations. I know how he felt all the time, because he was not shy about telling me how he felt.
So, mom's intuition, what do you think happened?
Well, I know he didn't disappear. I mean, you know, he just didn't disappear out of thin air. I know he didn't run away. I know that he didn't hitchhike, because that's not Dylan's character. He would have called. He would have either called me or called his brother or called, you know, his friends. It's hard to, you know. I have my own theories in my head, but I know what he didn't do, and I know how he didn't vanish.
How are you holding up now?
My family, my friends, you know, I mean, I'm not sure I'm really holding up. I'm managing day by day, because I look forward to that day that I can see his face, and that gets me through one day to the next.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about what Dylan's backpack looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Did it strike you as strange that there was nothing at his dad's house?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, for him to just take off walking or be abducted or whatever, it's like with a backpack, you know, and then to find nothing up in that area, not a sock, not anything that belonged to Dylan, very strange.
You know, when we talked to the sheriff's department about that, like, you know, an abductor wouldn't have taken the time to pack all his stuff into a bag before.
From the
so
house.
Do you think that there's a possibility that he thought he was going to get a ride from somebody, or he went out there looking for somebody to give him a lift down to Bayfield?
Well, he would have texted. He would have called. He would have used his phone after 8 o'clock or 8:30 at night. I mean, he wouldn't have just started walking. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but that area is very isolated. And Dylan was not that energetic to just start walking down that road and hope he catches a ride. He would have texted. He would have texted me and said, you know, because I have many friends down there. And, you know, he knows that they would have come and got him or whatever the case may be. I mean, I don't believe And we checked that whole entire road for footprints of Dylan's, you know, just to see if there were any, because he had very distinctive shoe markings on his soles. And there was no footprints of his. And it just is very curious to me because, you know, I know Dylan. I know Dylan better than anyone other than maybe his brother. And I know he would have texted or called, you know, and let either myself or his friends know, you know, what his plans were. He wouldn't just go walking down that road.
And now, what impression were you given about his phone? That it just, at some point, there was no blip from it anymore?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that the blips were, the last blips were up at Vallecito Lake?
Well, I don't know about the blips. I know that the last texts were pretty early in the evening, and that was someone like Dylan, especially when he was going to Bayfield, because he was really excited about seeing his friends.
So do you think something happened Sunday night or Monday?
You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question for me to answer. I know I didn't hear from him after Sunday night, and you know, that just makes me wonder when this really happened.
Have investigators given you any clues on what direction they're going in?
Not really. I mean, it's an open investigation, and that's what they tell me all the time.
Does it make you mad as a mom that they're not telling you everything?
Well, I mean, there's other things that make me mad as a mom, like the fact that Mark lost Dylan. That makes me very mad. And the fact that he won't speak to us, and the fact that he won't answer our questions, and the fact that every time I try to contact him, he's accusing me of harassing him, that makes me more angry. You know, the cops wouldn't be in this position if it weren't for, you know, Mark just losing Dylan. I mean, Corey and I have tried to keep in touch with him. We ask, you know, we ask him to help us in the search, and, you know, he's just very difficult and being very evasive, and that makes it, you know, that makes it extremely frustrating. So while I'm frustrated with the whole process, I'm more frustrated about the fact that, you know, Mark's not taking any accountability for losing Dylan. He's not remorseful. He's not, you know, it's frustrating that he's not reaching out more and trying to help more. It's extremely frustrating.
I don't have that many more questions for you. Oh, have the investigators searched your house for clues, gone through I don't know if you guys have a family computer or that?
Mm-hmm. They've taken our computers. They've been here. You know, I took a polygraph. I mean, you know, they've done all of that to, you know, prove Dylan is not here. We don't know where Dylan is. We wish we knew where Dylan was, or else, you know, you wouldn't be here. But yeah, they've taken the steps. What they're trying to do is clear everybody. And they're trying to narrow their focus down. And I just don't think Mark has taken the steps to clear himself. And that's why not only, you know, myself has some concerns about whether he's involved or not, but the whole community has, you know, not just this community, but everybody who sees what's going on. You know, I just don't think he's taken the necessary steps to clear himself. And that makes it very difficult for everybody else to clear him as well.
Has law enforcement said that anybody's clear? Have they said you're cleared?
No. No, they have not. I mean, you know, they are, it's an active, open investigation, and we have been, you know, very willing to do anything they want. You know, like I said, they've taken our phones, they've taken our laptops, they've polygraphed us, you know. We just want to find Dylan, you know. If you have to focus on us to clear us, okay, you know. And I think that they've, you know, taken the necessary steps to work towards doing that with everybody in the family.
Well, you know, and talking along that lines, we asked specifically. I mean, they haven't ruled out the possibility of somebody in the family taking it.
They have not.
So let me ask you this. You know, obviously they've given you a polygraph. They've looked at your phones. In a case like this, they have to look at the parents.
Absolutely, as they should.
So I have to ask this. Did you have anything whatsoever to do with Dylan's disappearance?
You know, I wish I did, because then he'd be home. I mean, I wish I could relive that day and do things a lot differently. I had absolutely nothing to do with Dylan's disappearance, and I really feel sorry for the person who did.
Why?
Because it's not going to be pretty when it comes down when we find Dylan. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, that are heart-wrenched over this. Not just us as a family, but, you know, the nation. I mean, Dylan has become everybody's child, and everybody's so fearful that this is going to happen to their own. And so they really want closure, as we all do. I want closure more than anything. And I know that, you know, there's so many people out there who are fighting for him to come home, as we are. And I just hope and pray that, you know, to the person who has Dylan, to the person who assisted in Dylan's disappearance, you know, that they, you know, have some empathy and have some compassion and bring Dylan home. It's not fair. You know, he's a 13-year-old boy. It's not fair that he's just out there in this big old world with no one to comfort him, no one to reassure him that everything's going to be okay. That's my job. And somebody's taken that away from me. And it angers me.
Do you, what would you say to that person, whoever took Dylan?
Be smart, you know. There's many ways that you can just, you know, anonymous tips. There's a lot of things that you can do at this point. All we want is Dylan home. That's all we want. That's all we've ever wanted. And we will do whatever we have to do. We're not going to stop. We're not going to back down. We're not going to forget about him. We're not just going to roll over and pretend like this never happened. We are all collectively, as a community, as a nation, we are all going to find Dylan, and we are all going to bring him home.
Then you think he's still alive?
Oh, I have to hope for Dylan. I mean, I'm his mom. I can't even. I can't focus. There's no reason to believe he's not. And so I will always hope for Dylan.
What would you say to Dylan if he can hear you right now?
I love you, buddy. We miss you so much. You're the missing part. And we need you home, and we will bring you home, no matter what it takes, no matter what rivers we have to cross, what you know, what boundaries we have to cross. We are looking for you, and you need to stay strong with us. We need to stay strong together.
And any questions from you? Okay. Yeah, she's going to get a couple shots of us talking. I'm sorry, I know it's so difficult to talk about.
we're all collectively a part of this, of course. I mean, you know,
Can I walk behind real quick?
I've never in a million years gone through. I mean, my mom has stage 4 cancer, and we just found out, and I prayed so hard that she would be okay, and now I pray so hard. I mean, everybody is praying so hard, you know, just bring Dylan home, no matter what it takes, you know, just bring Dylan home.
Yeah, this is, I mean, in the years that I've done what I've done, I've seen a lot of missing kids, and this is kind of the strangest one, because they got...
There's no answers. There's, there's nothing. He just, you know, I really believe, you know, that his dad would like us to all believe that he just vanished, just disappeared. But we know the realities of that. That's not the way the world works. You don't just disappear without a trace. And right now, that's, you know, that's the only answer is, and it's not an answer. It's definitely not an answer. He didn't just disappear. Somebody knows. Somebody knows a lot more than they're leading on. And it's time, you know, to stand up and do this, not for me, not for Corey, not for our family, but for Dylan. I mean, if you love Dylan, you know, stand up and set him free. He's not happy. I know he's not happy. He loves his environment. He loves his family. He just wants to be a normal 13-year-old kid. He doesn't want to be trapped in this, you know, world of missing. It's not fair to him.
I know that there are some kind of hearing for your custody case, and they talked to Dylan, or Dylan said something, but they won't tell anybody what he said back in September, right?
The judge made it very clear when he spoke with Dylan one-on-one that he would not release those records. They were released to law enforcement, but they won't release them to, you know, anybody other than law enforcement.
Doesn't that make you, like, what could have been in there that was so...
No, I mean, I know how Dylan felt. I mean... I am not concerned about, you know, what I want those records to be released to the investigators so that they can find, you know, whatever clues that might be in there. But, you know, there's a reason that the judge sealed those records. And, you know, I don't think that it's necessary because, you know, to protect Dylan, you know. That's all this is about, is protecting Dylan. Nothing else matters.
The records they did let us see had to do with some family violence in the past. Do you think Mark is violent?
I think Mark, yeah, has those tendencies.
Do you anyway suspect that they got in some kind of argument or something like that?
I hope to believe with all my heart that Mark would never hurt his own son.
But you say you hope to believe.
You know, I just have to believe that I didn't pick so wrong that, you know, he would hurt his own son.
I got the impression from his friends that they got along okay, though. Is that, or did you not have the same impression?
I just don't think Dylan knew Mark, and I just don't think Mark knew Dylan very well. I think that Dylan had grown a lot, you know, in the last couple of years, and I don't think Mark spent, I know Mark didn't spend a lot of time with him, and I just don't think he knew Dylan, especially as he was growing into his teenage years. I think he underestimated Dylan. I think he, you know, just didn't know him very well.
Were you afraid to let him go for Thanksgiving?
No, I mean, I wasn't afraid. I never had any reason to believe that Dylan would just disappear under Mark's watch. I mean, I never had any reason to believe that. So, you know, while Dylan was, you know, he was excited because we were having a big Thanksgiving thing here, and so he wanted to be here, but he was also excited about going to Bayfield to spend some time with his friends. And I never had any reason to believe that, you know, Mark would hurt Dylan or that, you know, Dylan would just disappear under Mark's watch.
So even though you guys had your differences, you felt like he was an adequate, responsible parent?
I felt that he was, yes.
Okay.
I look back now and wish I could relive that day. Because Dylan's not here now.
Hello, this is your host for The Missing and Abducted. Most often when a child is abducted, the media will be reluctant to air a story about the alleged abduction of a child. According to the State Department statistics, there are about 3,000 children currently missing who have been abducted by a parent and taken out of the U.S. illegally, and this is a growing phenomenon. Every day a child is suddenly ripped from the life they know, whether it be parental or stranger abductions, and it should be our responsibility as citizens to help bring awareness to these abducted children and the major impact that it has on the families that are left behind. And that is why we have this show, to raise awareness to missing persons and parental stranger abductions, and keeping you updated on what is current in the news on these missing cases and the found. If you are a left-behind parent of a stranger or parental abduction and want the opportunity to explain your story to the general public or know of someone who needs help, then please email us at symradio@yahoo.com.
All right, we're back live here. My name is Bob Carson on the special edition of Carson's Corner. And, of course, we are joined by my co-host, David Levitt. I got to tell you, David, this is a fascinating case. And as I listen to this, it's almost as if there is some sort of seed planted in my mind that maybe the father had something to do with this, especially the fact that this father, you know, they were on Dr. Phil. He was supposed to take a lie detector test. He weaseled his way out of it. There's something going on here, I think. And that's this is more than speculation.
Well, yeah, definitely. And like I say, I'll be putting it in the event because I was able to get that Dr. Phil interview, the full interview, and when actually Dr. Phil and directors go in behind stage and actually take behind stage and talk with him. And it's pretty interesting. You've got to see it. So I will actually, I'll put that in the event. I'll also put that on my website. Now, as far as my website goes, I just want to let people know. Right now, funds are kind of low, and so I have not been able, I just paid up on the server for until 2016. So the domain is paid for. It's still going to be there. It's just as far as work goes, the plugins and the things that I'm being able for feed. I mean, there's plugins that I can use with this website, but these plugins do cost money. So right now, until some more funds come in, right now we are basically just trying to keep it up to date with any updates or our Amber Alerts at the time, as far as anything else about unsolved cases and things like that. That's going to be on our Facebook page for the time being. So I just wanted to mention that, Bob.
Yeah, and you know, if you can in any way, shape, or form, if anybody out there is in a position to help out with funds, I would encourage you to do that, because this is time-consuming. David and I and everybody involved with this effort is just, you know, nobody's looking to make any money off of this. We're just looking to just fund the operation to make sure that, you know, whatever costs are involved could potentially be covered out there. But you know, even if we don't receive any funds, we're certainly going to continue to go forward with this effort here. We have another case that we found some information on, Ashley Summers. We were struggling earlier on in the show to get some information on her. David, we have some information posted in the chat room, and also Heather White has been great on giving us information on that. Is there anything you want to say? We don't have any clips regarding this case, but is there anything you want to say, David, about this particular case?
It just to me, I mean, the information, yeah, the things that come through my mind, and this is just my opinion and only my opinion, and of course, the host's opinions are their own opinions. And it just, to me, I think that, because when she got into the argument, because it's been part of this, I'll read the whole description, that way I can explain myself more better, and I can come up with some other words, too, the way I want to say this. Ashley Summers turned 14 years old when she left the West, her West 96th Street residence near Madison Ave on July 6, 2007. Now, Ashley Summers, and when you heard in the interview, the CNN interview with Christina Adkins, she also, Ashley Summers, went missing in the same area that Gina and Amanda and Michelle all went missing. If you had just joined in the show, that was Gina DeJesus, who was found, Amanda Berry, and Michelle Knight back on May 6th. She left the house on her own accord after a heated argument with her mother, taking all of her clothes and everything with her. Now, that right there to me, okay, and the police classified it as her being a runaway, but the thing of it it's not... They know that she's done this before, but she's always returned.
Right.
Something happened. And this case here needs to be investigated more because it's just some of the things that involves around it. I mean, because you've got, they all went missing in the same area.
Right.
Where Gina and Amanda were found. And my opinion on that, in that, you know, is that you see, look at Michelle. I mean, she was pregnant. They were used for sex slaves, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, I think that's been almost already established, you know, by this sick individual, Ariel Castro. And you know,
I think that's what happened to Ashley.
Well, here's the thing, and this is, you know, we can't illustrate this point enough, that we heard, you know, with the Dylan Redwine case, where according to the news reports, we started off by playing a couple news reports, and in some of the news reports, the news reporters were kind of suggesting that this may have been a runaway, or that they were suggesting that the authorities, you know, said that this kid was seen with another kid with the backpack, and there's all this, you know, this misinformation out there that seemed to point to Dylan being a runaway. But if you listen to some of the other evidence that, you know, the particularly from the mother, and you really start to delve into this case, you can really see that all the signs are pointing to an abduction or some sort of, you know, like Dylan's mother said, she knows what he didn't do. She knows, you know, so therefore, since she knows what he didn't do, then that leaves the possibility of something external happening to him, an abduction or, you know, something happened between him and his father. So the point is that, you know, so often the authorities tend to be wrong when they just dismiss these cases as, oh, it looks like this or it looks like that. No, you got to put it in the context. And then once you do that, you've really got to, you know, almost refocus your investigation. So there is an inclination with the authorities to write things off, but that's just irresponsible, especially...
That is irresponsible.
Yeah.
You know, and we need to keep these missing cases open is what we need to do. Okay?
Yeah.
And you take, like, with Heather, okay? I mean, we are working with this over a year, okay, on this case, about a little bit over a year possibly. But it took us a year, okay, just to get a digital sign up in Cleveland area for her that was
right.
donated, okay? And it's just the pressure that we put on, you know what I'm saying? And by keeping these out, you know, and these keeping these cases open, and keeping it in the limelight, and keeping it here in social networking, and you know, on Facebook and stuff, and sharing it all the time, and that's what this day is about, okay? So, you know, this is what we need, and by us doing this, it had gotten Tanya, the sister, it got them family to get that billboard up there with Amanda Berry also on there. It's a digital flash. It's really nice. It had to have cost a lot of money, and this was donated. This was actually donated. So, I mean, you know, or some friends, you know, in the events that they probably had, I believe. So, you know, that's something. Now, your other question was what now? I'm sorry.
Well, I didn't really have any. Questions. I was just, making a point about.
I thought you had another question. Okay, I thought you had another question. I'm sorry. You're going
no.
in and out. I don't know if I am. I don't know if I'm going in and out or not. But I know that you are sometimes. So, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hope that everything's okay with the audio. If there's some sort of problem with the audio, will somebody in the chat room let us know? Because I did a show earlier today and. It pretty much went okay. The audio didn't break up. And thanks to God, discussion said it sounds good here. But you know, this is what makes it worthwhile. You know, I remember on May 6th when they found Gina, they found Amanda, and they found Michelle. And you know, David, I didn't get to speak to you on the phone that day. I think you sent me a Facebook message, but I can only imagine your reaction because, you know, you were working with these families before any of the real mainstream media started to pick up on this, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, these efforts that we put in may seem small, but really they're not, because they keep everything going. And, you know, one of the things Nancy, Gina's mother, thanked everybody that kept her daughter's name alive and kept the case out there. And it was so gratifying. I remember when I heard the news about them finding these three girls, and I was telling everybody that I know that, listen, yeah, I actually had the pleasure of interviewing her. We actually had the pleasure of talking with her, and you've been corresponding with her, and that means so much to me, because it's so gratifying to be a small part of a puzzle that ultimately, you know, shows some girl that's happily reunited with her parents or her mother. And it's like, you know, this may not have happened. You know, it may not have happened if people didn't keep this alive and keep pressure on the authorities and whatnot. Because I'll tell you, when Amanda Berry called the 911 operator and she said, "I'm Amanda Berry," everybody in that area, I think, knew who Amanda Berry was. Certainly the next-door neighbor who ultimately rescued Amanda Berry, he knew who she was. He had heard of the case, and that's due to efforts that are put forth by people that really care. And I could tell you, David really genuinely cares, and often, David, you could just hear the emotion in your voice when you talk a lot about these cases. David, we're back on
the air. Yeah, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to call back, and I lost my cell signal. Go ahead. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Yeah, no, it was. I wanted to get your reaction when you heard about them, you know, the discovery of Gina, Amanda.
Oh, I was ecstatic. I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
Excuse me for that. This was one of the first cases that I actually, you know, that I had been approached with by Heather and Christina, Sonia's sister. Sonia's sister. Excuse me, I'm sorry. So yeah, and of course that was in tune with you know Gina DeJesus. We're all working on all of this. So when I saw the news, I was ecstatic. I was so wow. And then, of course, as I was just saying about the billboard that was put up there in the Cleveland area, I was just ecstatic. I could not believe it. I mean, it was just, you know, that news, and then a week or so later, this news here. So this is great, and by keeping pressure on this case, we are going to get her home. We're going to get it solved.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I got to tell you, you know, I know I could speak for David on this, that with every day that goes by, it's not that we lose hope, and it's not that we, you know, become more sinister. If anything, you know, I've known David for over a year now, and David gets more motivated and whatnot. And you know, I don't do nearly the amount of work on this as you do, David. I mean, I've got a million different things going on. I've got two radio shows here on this this program. I'm a postgraduate student. I'm working full time, but I would never ever stop being part of the effort to raise awareness and to do everything that I can. And I feel that it's my civic duty to do this. I feel obligated to do it. You know, and I think that those of us that are in the media, okay, the unconventional media, as we are, if you have a blog or whatever, I think you have a responsibility too, to at least spread the word, you know, pass the message, mm-hmm. pass, you know,
okay.
so to speak.
All right. Okay, we have got. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Bob. I'm sorry. We got like maybe 20 minutes left of the show. What happens is if we do go overtime, you guys will not hear us, but we also will still be talking and it will be recorded, so you can always listen in the archives. Okay, go. I'm sorry. Now you played the father's interview because I had to be out for a minute, so I had set the phone down. Was the father's interview played yet?
No, the father's interview is about 40 minutes, so we could play. Definitely a good portion of the interview if you want.
Okay. All right.
And that,
okay.
And I think that would be good too.
Yeah. Yes, it would be good. Okay. So yeah, that's my opinion on for Ashley. I mean, you know, we want to get this. We all want to get these cases solved. And the next case is we played that little clip with Christina Kleckner. I've got the info in, so I'll go ahead and basically give you the group, for her group, and that is. I will help my sister, Christina, and I will go ahead and post that again in the chat room. And again, that is facebook.com groups 571-698-446-197-471. Okay. And if you want to go ahead and, let's see, yeah, it's going to go in. I just say if anybody in the chat room, I know we have one there, what's his name again? I can't see the chat room right now.
God Discussion.
God Discussion, yes. If you'd like to call in and give your comments on this case, you can. And also, if you hear us also on Blog Talk Radio, but if you'd like to go ahead and tell us a little bit about your show too, definitely go ahead and call in.
Well, here's something pretty interesting. God Discussion writes, "We are a Google News provider. I would be happy to write a story about your work and diligence if you could use the publicity." David, what do you say to that?
Oh, my God, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. Let me get over here in the chat. Get some of these windows closed out. Yeah, see my browser just crashed again.
But that would be absolutely amazing. I mean, what that would do is that there are so many missing children out there and the parents and whatnot, and that would just make them more visible to you. And so it would only help the cause for sure, I would imagine, you know?
Yes, yes. Okay. So, go ahead and go into that interview, and if they want to go in and into the queue, they can go ahead and we put you in the queue. And if it's past the time after 2 o'clock, you definitely just please be patient, because this is what you said, it was like 40 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So go ahead and play it, and I will. Once I get back in the chat room, I will talk with God Discussion.
Yes, and just before I go to this, God Discussion asks, can I contact you on your Facebook page? Yeah, you could contact David. If you want, you could contact me. We'll certainly be happy to help you in any way, shape, or form. So that would be great. We're going to play you some of the interview with Dylan Redwine's father. Probably not going to play the whole interview, but you'll be able to get, maybe we'll play 15 minutes worth or something like that, or a little less, and then we'll David and I will come back on the air, and maybe we'll start to, give out some of the information, the websites, and so you could find out exactly how to get more information about the cases you've heard tonight and how you can get involved with this ongoing effort. So here is Dylan Redwine, the father of Dylan Redwine, and his name is Mark Redwine, and it's interesting because he's been pretty critical of the Amber Alert system, and this is a huge topic that David and I have discussed in the past, and we'll probably will discuss in the future about the possible revisal of the Amber Alert system, but he'll bring it up in his interview. So here is Mark Redwine, the father of Dylan Redwine.
We were inseparable. I mean, anywhere I was, he was right there beside me. You know, he would come to me before we would go to his mom. You know, I think in many ways that was part of the problems that developed in our relationship, was because while she was out earning a career, it was very difficult for her to lose sight of the fact that she wasn't there bonding with Dylan the way I was. And I think that that was a huge problem for her. Mm. And I think that that has been a problem for her for a long time now.
Dylan, obviously very interested in sports. You guys did trips to go see, like, major league teams play, yeah?
Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about that. You did some this summer.
Well, one of the goals that I've had, and this goes back to with Corey as well, but one of the things that I wanted to do in our lifetime was be able to go to every baseball stadium in the country and every NASCAR track in the country. So, for example, last year we went to Chicago to Wrigley Field, and then we went to Detroit to a NASCAR race, and then we went to Cleveland to watch the Rockies play the Indians, where we actually met Todd Helton's father while we were watching the game. And I will tell you that he spent 45 minutes and an hour talking to Dylan about what he could do to make a better baseball player. So this year we decided, Dylan was a huge Boston fan. Why, I couldn't tell you. But he wanted to go to Boston to see the Red Sox. People thought I was crazy because I was willing to drive that far for Dylan, just so he could see a baseball game. But that's what Dylan wanted, and I would do anything for that boy. So while we were there, we went to New York City because we'd been to Chicago the year before and had their version of pizza, and we wanted to go to New York City and have New York City-style pizza. So we went to Brooklyn. got in taxi cabs, went to the one of the most popular places in all of Brooklyn for pizza, stood in line for 45 minutes to an hour just to get in. And I didn't think we could eat the whole thing, and that boy ate two-thirds of it. He wolfed it down. You know, we got in the cab, went back to the hotel, and then we went to Cooperstown to see the Baseball Hall of Fame. And then from there, you know, we were kind of in a hurry to get back, but, you know, that's when we went through Buffalo, just because it's a town that has professional sports, specifically the Bills. And, you know, it's just something that Dylan can add to his list of places that he'd been that had to deal with professional sports. But, you know, we'd been gone probably a couple weeks. You know, he was in a hurry to get back because he wanted to spend time with his friends. He actually wanted to come here first and spend time with his friends, but we were coming in from the east and we were traveling through Colorado Springs. So I suggested to Dylan that, you know, we just contact his mom and make it so that she didn't have to drive over here or whatever, because she was obviously starting a job at some level. Which we all know is Colorado College. I mean, I don't know why she tries to hide that from everybody, but she doesn't want, apparently she doesn't want me to know where she works. It's not a real stumper.
I wouldn't, anyway.
So anyway, we dropped Dylan off, and then, you know, I didn't see him again, I don't think, until the date of the court hearing in September. I always try at least once a week to contact him. And I'm not going to nag him to death. I'm not going to call him every 5 minutes till he returns my calls. I can text him. I can leave a voicemail. You know, I leave it up to him to respond to me when he wants to. But I don't think that his environment was very conducive for that.
Do you think he didn't like living there? Did he ever say anything? Was he being bullied or having trouble making friends? Or
the night I picked him up from the airport, I was asking him that very question. How are you adapting to, you know, your new school, and how are you doing in school? And the only comment that he had made to me was that he was disappointed because the school wouldn't allow him to participate in the football program. And apparently because he was late getting registered, and there was maybe some delay in him getting a physical done. But, you know, we're talking about a mid-level school system, which should be focused on allowing anybody that wants to participate in sports, participate in sports. And so he was hurt by that. I could hear it in his voice. That bothered him.
What were your plans for Thanksgiving?
Well, we had talked about a couple of things. He was here for such a short time, we didn't have anything nailed down. You know, I anticipated, and I was correct in assuming that he wanted to spend time with his friends. So that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was kind of up in there because that was a day we could either travel to Colorado, or not Colorado Springs, but Castle Rock, where my brother lives, because he had made mention about wanting to go over there. Or he could hang out with his friends and come up here, and, you know, just the two of us would spend Thanksgiving, and then he could focus on spending the rest of the time that he was here with his friends. And, you know, I mean, I just wanted him to be happy. So when he, you know, wants to spend time with his friends, I get that. I understand that. I have no problem with that. All I need to know is that he's safe and where he's at and how to get a hold of him. And, you know, it's likely to pop in on him, check, make sure he's at where he says he's at. Those things are important to me, you know. When he's with me, it's me and him, with the exception of his friends. You know, I know those are important to him. But, you know, I monitor what he does, where he's at. You know, it's just me and him. There's not people coming and going in my life, because everything I focus on is him and us being together and spending that time.
His birthday's coming up on the 6th. Have you thought about what you want to do for his birthday?
Try not to think about that. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, you know, there's not a day goes by that I am not hopeful that we will find Dylan today. And, you know, I never thought in a million years that, you know, Christmas would have come and gone and we didn't have Dylan. I would have never thought in a million years that we'd be into a new year and we don't have Dylan. And I just can't imagine, you know, his birthday rolling around and we still don't have Dylan. We need to know where he's at. We need to know that he's safe. And we need to know that whoever's responsible for this has enough compassion in their heart to change what's been done and bring him home. I know that's important to his mom, and it's very important to me. We need Dylan home.
We were talking a little earlier. What do you want to say to whoever has Dylan?
Let him go. Drop him off at the closest police station. Take him to a Walmart. Dump him off. Let him be. Let him go. I mean, for the love of God, if you have any compassion in your heart, you would do the right thing and let him come home to his family.
Are you convinced that someone abducted him?
Well, I am. And, you know, I struggle with the fact that it could be somebody that he knew. You know, I didn't find out till later on that he was known to be a hitchhiker, which bothers me in that. But Dylan never met an enemy in his life, never met a stranger. That boy would talk to anybody. He never knew a stranger, I don't think, ever in his life. So he's very outgoing, very different from our older son, Corey. And that's a scary thought.
It's funny because we were talking to Ryan, and he said the same thing. Like, you know, he had been in a store, and like Dylan came right up to him and was like, "Hey, you want to hang out? You want to be, you know?" And that, you know, that was very. That's like one of the things he remembers the most about Dylan is how outgoing and friendly and wonderful he was. And
he
how
never met a stranger. He would talk to anybody, and that's concerning.
So you know, we talked about like maybe there's still somebody out there who saw something or thought something was strange. So during that last 24-hour period, so can you talk to us a little bit through like step by step? You went to pick him up at the airport on one time on Sunday through when you.
Well, his flight was late arriving. There was some delay leaving Denver. And so he didn't actually land probably, I want to say about 6 o'clock, 6:20, something like that. I don't remember exactly what time it was. But immediately leaving the airport, we went to Walmart.
Why'd you go to Walmart?
Well, I had just recently come in from doing a job in Silver City, New Mexico. So, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of things for us to eat. And, you know, Dylan's always adamant about having his snacks around and things for him to snack on when he's around. And so there was a need for us to go grab enough things from Walmart to be able to sustain ourselves for a day or two while we were figuring out. You know, I didn't even buy anything for Thanksgiving because I didn't have any concrete plan as to what we were going to do, whether we were going to do it here or whether we were going to do it somewhere else. So all I was trying to do was focus on, you know, having enough to get us by for the next couple of days till we can make those arrangements. You know, Dylan wanted to throw in a few videos that he found in the $5 bin, so we threw those in, which is one of the movies we would watch the night, you know, we were together. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't a whole lot of things that we needed. We went to McDonald's. I wanted to go to a sit-down restaurant. Sit down and talk to him. He wanted to go to McDonald's. He always wants to go to McDonald's. A 13-year-old kid doesn't want to go to McDonald's. You know, it wasn't my first choice. We didn't even eat it in McDonald's. We got it in the truck, went to the drive-thru, and we're eating it on our way home. So,
So then you get home at what time, like 8:30?
We left McDonald's probably around 7:30-ish, and it's about a 45-minute drive from Durango to get up here. So we would have been here probably about 8:15, 8:30-ish, somewhere in there.
So then, so he's texting back and forth with his friends, like, hey, I'm not going to
Well, there's down. Not a lot of cell phone service between Durango and the lake up here. And it's not until you come up past the dam that you actually can get your cell phone service as a Verizon customer. But I specifically remember him texting about that time, and he was texting on the couch. After we were here watching the movie, he was over there texting or playing a video game or something. I just assumed he was texting because it's not like that he can't ever get service up here. It's just very sporadic. You know, one place he might be he can't get service, and then he could take a step to the left or a step to the right, and voila, all of a sudden he has service. And the two places.
All right, we're back live here on Carson's Corner, the special edition. Unfortunately, we are rapidly running out of time. So, David, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to have to just close it out here. I'm not even sure if we're still on the air, as I just received the 10-second warning. But why don't you direct people where they can go to find out more information about what we've got going on here.
Okay. You're skipping in and out here. Could you say that again? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Is that better now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Yeah. We're getting close to wrapping up here. I just got the 10-second warning here. I'm not even sure if we're still on air, but I just want to direct people to Facebook pages and your website and anywhere that you feel is important for people to visit to find out more information about these cases.
Mm-hmm. Yes. well, you can actually find me on Facebook, and that is Missing and Abducted. It's facebook.com/missing.and.abducted. And you also can go to our website at www.symradio.com/live, and you can hear the recent podcast here from Carson's Corner and any podcasts I have done on Ustream. I'm trying to figure out Ustream because I normally used to broadcast on Stickum, but Stickum has gone out of business. They shut down. So I'm learning the new broadcasting system with Ustream. So, but there will be, hopefully, we can, once we get some more plugins added on to be able to broadcast live there, then that'll be up, and you can listen to these shows in video or audio, whichever you like. That's basically all that I have to say. Those are the websites that I have. Now,
big thanks.
Christina, yeah. Christina Atkins, that is, let's see, Christina Atkins is Facebook groups, Where is Missing Christina Atkins, and also Christina Kleckner, that is on facebook.com/ 571-6948-4461974-71. We're going to have to see if we can possibly get that to say help find my sister Christina instead of all these numbers. It'd be a lot easier.
Right.
Yes, so. But those are the groups, and then Christina Atkins. Ashley Summers, you can find her group under my profile on Facebook at facebook.com/NDSMAN64. And you can go right into that group right there. The interview with Dylan's father, that was the last one there, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right, you've got it, and you can also, and when you like the Facebook page, Michigan Abducted, go into the events there, and you can see all of the information there on all the cases that we're working on right now. I'm sharing on Facebook for the May 25th.
And I want to give a big thanks to Heather White, who joined us pretty much the whole night, providing valuable information in the chat room. Big thanks to God Discussion, the radio show, and Google Provider. I encourage you to check out their website and their webpage. You could find it. They're actually following me on Blog Talk Radio. You could follow me on Blog Talk Radio. And to hear this podcast again, you can either go to David's site at SYMradio.com. You could visit his Facebook page, or you could just visit the channel that you are listening to now, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. This show will be saved in its archived form right after the conclusion of this show. And my name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you. My Facebook page is facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You can friend me on there. David, it's been a pleasure. And, you know, yes. God bless you, my friend. And you know, I consider you a close ally in this fight that we have on our hands here. And I thank you for all your work. And I look forward to the next radio show, my friend.
Yes. And I was wondering if you could just do one more thing for me.
Sure.
You know, could you, to end off the show with, can you go ahead and play Glendine Grant's
yes.
promo? Yes.
You got it.
Because she is really in fighting human trafficking with her missing daughter. And you can actually go into the archives on Carson Corner and listen to an interview with her, I and Bob Carson.
Yes, exactly. Glendine recorded this promo last year, a little over a year, probably over a year ago, for this show. And take down the information in this clip. And again, support Glendine's group and support our efforts as well. Thank you very much. Until next time, we will see you guys. Thank you very much for listening once again.
I'll meet you on Skype too, Bob.
Take care.
Okay.
My name is Glendine, and I'm an abolitionist. I live in Kamloops, British Columbia in Western Canada. My daughter, Jessie Foster, is an international endangered missing person and the victim of human trafficking. Jessie went missing March 29, 2006, almost 6 years ago. Jessie's disappearance has prompted me to take action against the crime of human trafficking. Her case has been told in hundreds of newspaper articles, in dozens of radio and TV and magazine interviews, in documentaries, and in many books. I write several blogs talking about human trafficking, and I am active on many social networking sites. I even now have my own human trafficking awareness and education blog talk radio show. I also give presentations on human trafficking. I give awareness presentations at different events, launches of organizations, fundraisers, high schools, and most recently at a university. In November of 2010, I was given the honor of being the Hope Giver for Salvation Army Canada. Hope Giver is where you were once without hope and you now give hope to others. And I was working with Canada Fights Human Trafficking, and I'm also on the board of advisors for the Frederick Douglass Family Foundation. Frederick Douglass is one of the most well-known abolitionists in history. There are many other organizations that I work with. I've spoken at different events alongside a member of parliament here in Canada, Joy Smith, author Professor Benjamin Perrin, and Miss Canada Tara Tang. They are all abolitionists, and they all are working together with each other and with myself and others to combat this crime. I know that my actions have helped to fight human trafficking. I've seen it in results of what I do. Parents and young women have come up to me. They've spoken to me of issues similar to Jesse's case. They seem to be strange. And now they feel as if they were signs of possible human trafficking. I've also been told several times that I have helped them or someone they love to perhaps not become a victim. Students, male and female, come up to me at high schools. They tell me they'll never forget Jesse, that they are so grateful now to be informed about human trafficking, and I get hugs. Others can help me in this movement by joining MAF, Mothers Against Trafficking Humans, on Facebook. And I would like everybody to become informed, to stay informed and inform others, and to become an abolitionist. Thank you.